May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Amen. 1908, Okinawa, Japan. My husband's great-grandfather, just 19 at the time, lay dying in a hospital bed. As he drifted in and out of consciousness, he heard the doctors standing around him declare him a hopeless case. He felt a nurse try to find a pulse and fail. And then Hisanori Kano felt a sense of calm, saw a vision of light. What I saw became God to me, he said later. And Hisanori's condition dramatically improved. His doctor, a Christian, proclaimed it a miracle. After his recovery, Hisanori sought answers in the Bible, in Christian classmates at school. And even though he was raised a Buddhist, even though he was in a country that was just 1% Christian at the time, Hisanori was baptized Hiram Kano that next year. From that moment on, Hiram was determined to follow God's purpose for his life, the life he knew God had saved for a reason. Following God's call on his life led Hiram to the United States, to Nebraska, where he began organizing the nascent Japanese American community, teaching farming, English, and most importantly to him, the good news of Jesus Christ. Bishop Beecher recognized Hiram's leadership and passion for the gospel, and in 1936, Hiram became Father Kano, a missionary priest for the Episcopal Church to the Japanese American community in Nebraska. This is a powerful story. The story of a man whose life flowed from his gratitude for God's blessing. See, Father Kano left behind more than his native land. He surrendered a prestigious and privileged life as a Japanese nobleman to take up a simple life of farming and prayer. Yet, had this been all of Father Kano's story, I'm not sure my husband's great-grandfather would have been declared a saint in the Episcopal Church in 2015. I'm not sure he would have been honored with his own feast day or a special collect or have an icon of him hung in a Nebraska church. What made Father Kano a saint is what he did with what came next. On Sunday, December 7th, 1941, after celebrating the Eucharist, Father Kano was arrested on the steps of his church and imprisoned, along with thousands of other Japanese Americans in the wake of the Pearl Harbor bombing. This was a moment of deep shame for Father Kano, an act of betrayal by his beloved adopted homeland. He wrote, "We had committed no crime, yet we were imprisoned and our human rights taken away. This was truly an unendurable humiliation." And yet, in the same breath as he describes the camps, the guards, and the searchlights, being stripped of his possessions and given a criminal number, in that same paragraph, Father Kano wrote in his memoir, "At the same time, this camp was indeed the work given me by God. I made a firm resolution to go about his business. God gave me 5 churches, Father Kano writes, the 5 internment camps he was moved to throughout the war. And in each, he preached and prayed and pastored with his people. And through his tireless efforts, a whole generation of Japanese Americans were brought into the Episcopal Church, learned English, began to organize for the right to become naturalized U.S. citizens. There are too many extraordinary stories of Father Kano's bravery and compassion in the camps to recount this morning. But when I reflect on the gospel from this morning, I find myself returning to the story of that first church, as he called it, that first camp in Sparta, Washington, in 1942. There, Father Kano was the only Japanese American thrown into a military cell with German Americans and court-martialed American soldiers. I could see in their eyes that I was a hated enemy foreigner, Father Kano wrote, and yet he resolved to be their priest. He listened to their problems and buoyed their spirits, preached to them and prayed for them. A graduate of the Hitler Youth came to him in spiritual crisis. An American deserter sought his advice and prayers for his trial. One of Father Kano's own prison guards asked to attend his prayer services. His church community grew. And when the government came to move him to another camp, the men who had seen him as the enemy pleaded with tears in their eyes for him to stay with them. Jesus preached, "Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone takes your goods, do not ask for them again." In his obituary in the Rocky Mountain News in the late 80s, Father Kano's bishop at the time recalled the priest's reaction to the U.S. government's recent decision to pay financial reparations to the World War II internees. He told me, "Bishop, I don't want the money. God just used that as another opportunity for me to preach the gospel." Father Kano's stance of gratitude was not a case of all's well that ends well, or of a wise all is forgiven view from 3 decades on. In the very midst of being seen as the enemy, Father Kano resolved to view himself as blessed. During the 5 years of war when he was treated as a criminal and the 2 years following when he and his family were reviled and persecuted by their neighbors and the press, during all that time, Father Kano relentlessly reached out with the hands of Christ to do the work of a pastor, of a missionary, of a saint. Jesus preached, "Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you, when they revile and defame you. But woe to you," Jesus warns, "who equate God's love with wealth or a full belly or temporary joys. Woe to those whose trust in God depends on comfort and circumstance, because it will be easily lost." Father Kano knew that God's blessing was deeper, in his life itself. Father Kano's conviction that God called him to the camps gave him the strength to love the very people who rejected him, to create church wherever he was sent. his determination, his sense of blessing that could not be shaken, that's what gave him the ability to do the work that needed to be done. Faith is more than just the stance we choose to take in the world. It is also getting down to the work itself. Jesus preached, "Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you." Love, do good, bless, pray. Today, we honor those who have walked this way of love ahead of us. But the saints are not just alive in our memories, their stories and legacies. Our faith proclaims that the saints are here present, gathered at this table in each Eucharistic meal. We affirm today that we are living members of a mystical body, one that is defined not by the temporary blessings of this world, nor the curses of our enemies, but by the love of God poured out. Unified by moments of divine clarity in hospital beds, in baptismal fonts, and makeshift prison cell altars, our sainthoods, yours and mine, spring from those moments when each of us fully know that we are Christ's own forever. Amen.